Parsha of Korach, of course, begins and is dominated by the episode of Korach. Very difficult to know exactly what Korach wants, and even to understand what Korach is saying, as is sometimes the case. And when it comes to machlokas, there's many different ways of presenting it, and even then you're not sure if you actually are aware of what the underlying motives are. The first question, which is raised by Mefarshim, interestingly, is one of timing. As if to say, let's take Korach at his word. That's certainly a reasonable place to start. Korach assembles a group of men around him, and they feel that they can also be the Kohen, maybe even the Kohen Gadol. They don't feel that should be restricted to Aaron. Well, and that, of course, begets the test with the Ketores, and then everybody finds out that really it was Aaron and not them. But in terms of their claim, Mefarshim raises a simple question. Two, in fact. Firstly, they seem to be railing against the reality in the sense that they're looking to turn the clock back. Perhaps it used to be true that Avoda was available for those that came forward, perhaps the Bechorim, perhaps others. But life has changed. There was something called the Chet HaEgel, and discussed and saw in Parshas Bamidbar and in Parshas Ba'Lo Secha. So things change. So if things have changed, so what is behind the insistence that they should unchange? That's not always a possibility. Secondly, the question of timing. The transfer of Avoda from the Bechorim, or the Jewish people at large, to the Leviim and Kohanim is something that took place shortly after Yom Kippur. It was forfeited at the time of the Egel, which is already Shivas HaBetamas, and then there were those sets of 40 days. But let's assume the Jewish people kind of get back on track sometime after Yom Kippur. That's when all these things become known. The Machlokas of Korach takes place months later. We've already been through a bit of traveling. We've had the Meraglim. And we're post Tisha B'Av. I mean, that's a good half a year after all of that. Why was it that Korach waited so long, if indeed the issue is that the Bechorah has been transferred and they wish for it to reclaim it? Why did it take them so long to get this moving? That's an interesting shine. And the Sefer Shiras David discusses this, and it's really based on a Ramban. And the Ramban is itself a fascinating comment. After all, we should appreciate, says Ramban, to start up a machlokas with Moshe is no simple thing, even if you think you're right. After all, he's Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's never done the wrong thing by the Jewish people yet. He's only taken them out of Mitzrayim. He's leading them through the Midbar. So it really, it's quite an event. It's quite a change to all of a sudden strike up a machlokas with him. And what's interesting about these things is that sometimes the events such as are described in Korach, they need a climate. Certain significant things can't happen unless the atmosphere is right for them, and ripe for them. And the atmosphere was missing, but it has just now fallen into place. And the background to that is Chet HaMeraglim. And should we ask, my Inyan Meraglim, it's of Korach, what's Korach, what's being a Kohen, yes Kohen, not Kohen, what's that got to do with the Chet HaMeraglim? So the situation, says Ramban, is the Jewish people have fallen into a state of disillusionment with Moshe. How so? What's to be disillusioned? Because there was a decree that was issued against them that they should die out in the Midbar. And it's still there. And it's actually happening. And it hasn't been revoked. And it hasn't been rescinded. And it hasn't been cancelled. And everybody's wondering, where's Moshe? I mean, isn't that Moshe's job? I mean, that's his specialty, is to revoke Hashem's decrees against us. He did it with the Eagle, and the sense is that if there's ever a decree, Moshe should be able to rescind it. And if he doesn't, then that's a failing on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu. Which, when you think about it, is a great irony, because the feeling of disillusionment with Moshe, which actually led to a good bit of machlokas, was the product of an unrealistic sense of what Moshe could do. As far as they're concerned, he could do anything. And there's no decree that he can't revoke. But that's actually not true. But because it was such an inflated sense of Moshe can do anything, from such a high regard of Moshe, came a fall. And then all of a sudden, people are unhappy with him. And that's the price a person pays for having these expectations. So this is now the atmosphere. And all of a sudden, you can complain, and people will not as rise to defend Moshe as swiftly as they would have otherwise. Because if Moshe really cared about us, we wouldn't still be in the Midbar. He'd get Hashem to change his mind. And this brings us to, in a sense, a sister question here. Namely, another decree, shall we say, the decree that the Avoda, although originally it lay within the domain of the firstborn or the Jewish people at large, it was transferred as a result of the Chet HaEgel. And once again, says the Shiras David, now you know, entering the picture, the feeling, and Korach is capitalizing on this feeling when everyone's saying Moshe can do anything, and therefore why didn't he do this, and there's no such thing as impossible, which means, apart from anything else, it's never our fault, because there isn't any mess that we make that Moshe can't clean up. So this is the time that Korach was able to, they would say, tofes tramp in the modern Hebrew. They have to say to jump on the bandwagon. And to say here too, it's another decree. The Avoda was taken away from the Bechorim, given to the Kohanim, but that shouldn't be final. Once again, here's the chorus. Where's Moshe? Why can he not revoke that decree as well? And that, therefore, was the expectation which was finally allowed to be heard and would actually receive some type of sympathetic hearing from Bnei Yisrael. It's interesting to consider, in light of this, an interesting medrash, because the moral of the story is sometimes the Jewish people have inflicted such damage that cannot be reversed. Not everything can be reversed. And not always now. When Moshe davens continuously towards the end of the Chumash that he be allowed to enter into Eretz Yisrael, which is mentioned in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshanan, amongst other places, so the Pasuk says, by Yomer Hashem Eli, Ravlach. Hashem said, enough, Ravlach. Al Tosef Debar Le'od B'Mazeh, it's not going to happen. And don't talk about it anymore. Ravlach. That expression, Ravlach, it's too much, is associated by the Medrash to words that Moshe himself said to Bnei Korach, which he did. He said, Ravlach em Bnei Levi, it's too much. And the Medrash says, he said to them, Ravlach em, and therefore Hashem said to him, Ravlach. B'Rav biser, B'Rav bisruhu. He communicated a message with Rav, he received a message with Rav. And on the face of it, the Medrash, is actually a Gemara, if I'm not mistaken, Maseches Sota, seems to be saying that this, it sounds like a bit of a midah keneged midah, almost like a punishment for Moshe. As if to say, you said Rav to them, so I'm saying Rav to you. But the question is, did Moshe say anything wrong when he said Rav Lachem Bnei Levi? Everything he said is correct. You're asking for too much. So if it wasn't wrong for him to say that, so why was he, in a sense, why did he get that back? What sounds like a punishment. But according to our discussion, it's not necessarily a punishment, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the midah keneged midah here, is that in the same way that Korach and those amongst his men who were earnest, who were sincere, really did feel that there's nothing that cannot be reversed, and Moshe had to break the news to them that sometimes you're asking for too much because there are certain things that cannot be reversed, and he did so with the words, Rav Lachem, and he was correct to do so. This is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a sense, is breaking the news to him that as surely as you said that to them, as far as you're concerned, this is one of those situations. Whatever happened in the Meimariva, whatever resulted in Moshe not being into Eretz Canaan, Hashem says to Moshe, it's a Rav Lach situation, just like with Korah. That you understood. This all you need to understand. So this is the first point, and it touches, as we said, on a number of basic questions. Once again, what exactly was the expectation of the Jewish people at large, or certain members amongst them, that the Avodah could return to them, and why was it that they waited until this point? What's behind the timing for the Machlokas to ignite suddenly? Now, I'd like to take a digression just for a few moments and talk about one of the members of Korach's team, about whom we hear mentioned by name in the beginning, and then we never hear from him again. And he is Own ben Peles. The first pasuk, Perek Tzion, pasuk Aleph, reads, Vayika Korach, ben Yitzhar, ben Kehas, ben Levi. We're going to hear plenty from Korach. V'dasan v'aviram b'nei Eliab. Dasan and Aviram, we've already heard too much from them, and we're still going to hear a little bit more. And then Own ben Peles, and he's a rather mysterious person because we never hear from him again. And there's a fascinating Gemara that tells us about Own. And that is that he was removed from the Machlokas. He was taken out of his participation with Korach. There was an executive intervention that took place on the part of his wife. And the Gemara says that she reasoned with him, which sometimes is a good idea. And she said, what's in it for you? Think about it. Who are you now? There's the leader and you're a follower. The leader's Moshe, which we happen to think is correct, and you're the follower. Let's say this whole machlokas happens and somehow things change. So what's going to change? Nothing for you. Korach will be the leader. And you'll still be the follower. So there isn't really enough of a payoff for you to risk it. That's what she said to Own. So that's an interesting perspective. Own apparently had never thought about this, or not in that way. But then Own said, "Well, I'm already invested, and how can I pull out?" So she said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." So she gave him to drink and put him to sleep. Sometimes the greatest help a husband can do is basically be taken out of the way. And so she sat by the door, and she sat by the door in a way, she uncovered her hair, and the people of Korach, they're not going to come in near the house, they're not going to talk to her, and therefore that she blocked them from getting to Own, and saved him. And that's it. And that's why this is the first and last we hear of Own ben Peles. So it occurred to me to ponder, what was it that Own's wife said that he really hadn't thought about? In other words, the way that she describes it, it sounds very reasonable. Did he see things differently initially? She says that, once again, to state her position, Lamaisa, nothing will change for you. You're a follower with him, you're a follower with him. And therefore, it's not worth it for you. Perhaps Own felt that if he really did believe in what Korach was saying, that maybe he doesn't mind being a follower of Korach. He'd prefer to be a follower of Korach than of Moshe. But then he began to see the light, the way his wife put it. But it could be that there is something else. Once again, we come to the possibilities as to what it is that Korach was claiming, even. But if you look at his opening salvo to Moshe, which is in Pasuk Gimel, Vayikalu, Amosheva la Haron, they all gathered around Moshe and Aaron, Vayom Alehem Rav Lachem. Ironically, the first one to say Rav Lachem was Korach, although he was incorrect. But he said, you've taken too much for yourselves. Ki kol ha'edah kulam kadoshim. The entire Edah is holy. Uvesochem Hashem. Hashem is amongst all. Nasul akal Hashem. So why do you raise yourselves up over the congregation of Hashem? That is the first communication from Korach, his first criticism. That's all we hear from him at this stage. And what does he mean to say? The simple rendering of his words seems to be that the entire Jewish people are holy, and therefore there's no need for you to raise yourself up against them, higher than them, sorry, because they're all holy. So now the question is, so what does Korach want, or what does he seem to want? He seems to be saying that the Jewish people don't really need any leaders. They don't need anyone to be higher than anyone else. If they're all equally holy, so then they can commune. And there doesn't need to be leader and follower. Everyone can be equal. And that's actually quite an appealing thing to hear. Because officially what Korach is saying is that we don't need any leaders. So no one needs to be a follower. Everyone can be the same. And therefore, Ohn perhaps did prefer that way, because currently Moshe is the leader, he's the follower. What Korach is promising is that no one needs to follow, you won't need to follow anyone because there won't be any leaders and everyone will be equal. But then really the prescience of Ohn's wife and her really incredible insight is to tell him that there's no such thing as what Korach is describing. There's no such thing as what Korach is promising. Because as long as people are people, there will never be a situation where no one will be the leader. You don't realize that even as Korach says that the Jewish people don't need any leaders, that if he deposes Moshe and he comes in as the one who represents everyone as being equal, he will become the leader. You think there won't be any followers at that stage. There will. All the followers will stay the same. The only thing that will change is the leadership from Moshe to Korach. And even though Korach says you don't need leaders, but he will step into that position and Lemaisa de facto become the leader. And at the risk of fast forwarding for, you know, all those centuries, basically what Ohn's wife is saying is that the promise of equality and all of those things, it can never happen. That means that if it's comrade Korach will become the Tsar. That's basically what Ohn's wife is saying. And this was really a breakthrough for Ohn, because she's saying that the one who represents the equality will ultimately be the one who is more equal than everyone else, and you will stay the same. When Ohn saw the light, she bailed him out. So I think there's a great deal to reflect upon, and she was seemingly ahead of her time by a good while there. Well, moving on. Still within the beginning of Korach, because there's more layers and more possibilities. If we go back to Pasuk Aleph and see how Korach himself is introduced. Vayikra Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehas ben Levi. Okay. Now, Rashi notes, and it's from Chazal in Masechet Sanhedrin, that there's someone in the ancestral line here who's conspicuously missing, and that is Yaakov. Yaakov is not mentioned here. And of course, the background to that is, you've gone up so many generations. I mean, you just keep going. Im kvar, as kvar. Is Korach, ben Yitzhar, ben Kehas, ben Levi. I mean, why do you stop there? And if you'll say, well, you know, four generations is enough. Well, two or three generations is enough. And then it breaks before Yaakov. And indeed, Rashi, quoting Chazal, says that Yaakov requested that his name not be mentioned in connection with Korach, which is very interesting because it's the Torah talking here. The Torah is describing, but in deference to Yaakov, the Torah doesn't mention his name. It's an interesting request also on the part of Yaakov. Does he know exactly what will happen with Korach? Or does he know generally what might happen with Korach? It's an interesting request to put in case anything goes terribly wrong hundreds of years' time. I don't wish to be associated with that. But there is another approach to understanding why Yaakov's name is missing, quite different than this first approach mentioned in Rashi. And in order to see the background to that, we need to take a look once again at what Korach is claiming on behalf of the Jewish people. He says, zoning in on the Avodah. Why is it that only the Kohanim can do the Avodah? Why is it specifically that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol? That shouldn't be. So if we ask Korach for a moment, well, what should be? Who do you think should do the Avodah? Well, there are a number of answers to this question. And in fact, the number of answers equals the number of factions within Korach's group. Because they're not homogenous. They come from different origins, different points of departure, and they have different claims to the Avodah. On the one hand, as we see clearly from Moshe's words, a good amount of Korach's men are made up of Levian. He actually addresses them directly. Shimunah b'nei Levi. Okay. And who do Levi, if you would ask them, who do they think the Avodah should accrue to, should be directed to, or belong to? They will say, to the tribe of Levi. Okay. Also, among Adas Korach, these 250 men, which Rishonim tell us, there were Bechorim, there were firstborn. Well, I think we know what they're going to say. If you ask them, who do you think should the Avodah should belong to, they will say, to the Bechorim. The only tribe that's actually mentioned by name in terms of the original group is Reuven. Dasan and Aviram, Onan and Peleth, B'nai Reuven, and a number of them were B'nai Reuven. And if you ask them, well, who do you think the Avodah should go to, their response would be to B'nai Reuven, obviously. Now, these three answers aren't the same. And in fact, they're rather exclusive one to the other. If they are indeed, if this is the answer, then it doesn't include the others. If it's Shevet Levi, it doesn't include Bechorim, not Bechorim of the Jewish people at large. If it's Bechorim, it's got nothing to do with Levi. And if it's Reuven, it's got nothing to do with either of them. And that brings us to an important point with regards to Korach's group. And that is that there was as much machlokas waiting to happen within Korach's group as there was between him and Aaron. As if to say, you've got these 250 men, and they think the Avodah shouldn't be with Aaron. But within them, there are subgroups who think the Avodah shouldn't be with the other subgroup. They're currently held together because they have a common opposite, namely Aaron, because Aaron is none of them. But if one could only imagine in the nightmare scenario that they would have succeeded, on Isruchag of their victory, they would have set about eating each other. The B'nai Reuven would then embark on a machlokas with the B'nai Levi, and both of them would have a machlokas with all the Bechorim. So that's a machlokas waiting to happen. And that's very often one of the trademarks of machlokas, which is Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, of which Korach and his group are the classic example. That's a very ignoble way to go down in history. Korach v'chol adoso, because it's Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, they're not really united by the same thing. Each one has their own interest. And that's why I point out there's a certain lack of symmetry in terms of the way this non-kosher machlokas is presented, as opposed to the way the kosher machlokas is presented. The epitome of kosher machlokas is Hillel v'Shammai. Ezo machlokas is the Mishnah Perkei Avos Perakei. Ezo machlokas she l'shem shamayim. That's machlokas Hillel and Shammai. The Ezo machlokas she'ena l'shem shamayim. That's the machlokas Korach v'chol adoso. So Mifarshim point out, Malbim and others, we don't seem to have the same parallels here, because when you spoke about the machlokas, the Shem Shamayim, you mentioned both sides of the machlokas, Hillel on the one side, Shammai on the other side. But when you spoke about the machlokas, Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, it should have, true to form, said the machlokas Korach v'Moshe. I mean, that's the or Korach v'Aaron, or Ados Korach and Aaron. But it says the machlokas Korach v'chol adoso. And that itself is a message for us, that if the machlokas is not the Shem Shamayim, you are as likely to find machlokas within that actual side as you are between the two sides. There was machlokas between Korach v'chol adoso. However, things as they stand in these early heady stages, Korach is somehow uniting them all together. Except if we take these three groups again, and we know what their answer is. Levi says Levi. Bechorim say Bechorim. Reuven says Reuven. But if we try and ask why, we'll see that some of the answers make more sense than the others. Should we ask Shevet Levi, the Levim amongst them, you feel the Avodah should belong to you? On what basis? Al Shumma. Well, they have an answer. It might not be correct, but in their estimation, they have an answer. Their answer is, well, if indeed the transfer of Avodah is a result of the Egel, well, isn't it true that the tribe of Levi was not at all involved in the Egel by a spoil of Kobene Levi? In which case, they should remain untouched by the events of the Egel, and the Avodah should accrue to Shevet Levi as a whole. Okay, that's their claim. It's not correct, but that's their claim. If should we ask the Bechorim, why do you think? Well, they say the Avodah was always with the Bechorim prior to the Egel. We think that the whatever damage happened with the Egel should be reversible, as we spoke about in the beginning of the Shir. Maybe Moshe can reverse it, or someone can do something. But then, if we ask B'nai Reuven, they really seem to be the anachronism within the group. As if to say, you ask Reuven, why do you think that the sons of Reuven should have the Avodah? Well, their answer presumably will be, well, Reuven's the Bechor. In other words, they're taking the concept of Bechorah and applying it to their tribe. Their tribe is the firstborn tribe, and that's the end of that. Except that's the most difficult claim to accept, because without putting too fine a point on it, Reuven forfeited the Bechorah generations ago. It was taken away by Yaakov. Reuven Bechoriata, he should have been the Bechor, yes sir says, yes sir us, but he lost it. So they're the ones that seem to be least up to date with the situation. And yet somehow they still find their way into Korach's group. Korach has reeled them in. And the question is how? Says the Kli Yakar, what Korach promised is an unbelievable thing. You know, at that stage, you can promise anything. He promised whoever will join with him, he will see to it that he will redress every imbalance ever to have occurred within Jewish history, including Jewish prehistory. Which means, whoever you are, Korach has a promise for you. You're Levim, you'll keep the Avodah. You're Bechorim, you'll get it back. You're Reuben, you'll get it back. You had it, and you lost it. I mean, I'll get it back for you. Stick with Korach. It's amazing. I mean, as campaign promises go, that's a whopper. But that's what Korach promises. When you're in the promising stage, maybe why hold back? Says Kli Yakar, this can give us a completely new insight into the omission of Yaakov's name. It's a very sad situation here, but the omission of Yaakov's name in terms of Korach's Yichus. He's Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas, Ben Levi, and no further back. Why not? We saw that the omission of Yaakov's name from that opening pasuk is that Yaakov wished to disassociate himself from whatever might happen with Korach and his men. But according to the Kli Yakar, Yaakov's name is missing because Korach is making a point of disassociating himself from Yaakov. Because Yaakov is the one who took the Bechorah away from Reuven. And therefore what Korach is saying is, we can start afresh. We don't need to be beholden by any changes made by anyone, not by Moshe or whoever, and not even by Yaakov. We start with the tribes, and I'm from Levi, but you're from Reuben, and Reuben's the Bechor, and we don't recognize what Yaakov did. He's looking to set the clock back hundreds of years. Korach will do that for you, if only you vote for him. And amazingly, they went for it. Which, when you think about it, it takes as much faith in Korach to be able to do that. For that amount of faith, you may as well just believe in the Torah. And the difference is, once the Avodah have been waved in front of them, so then they follow Korach and they stop asking questions. And what's very interesting at this stage is to keep going in terms of trying to understand what it is that Korach is officially trying to arrange for everyone. In Pasuk Gimel, which we read, Vayikalu al Moshe val Aaron, Vayomer lehem Rav lachem, it's too much. Ki kol ha'elo kudum kadoshim v'sochem Hashem. Maduatisnasu akala shem. Everyone's holy. Why are you raising yourself above them? And the simple understanding of those words, as we mentioned before, is that Korach is saying we don't need leaders. We might need a secretary, and I'm prepared to humbly fill in that job, but we don't need leaders per se. That seems to be what Korach is saying. Once again, the Kli Yakar has a somewhat different understanding. There's room to say that some type of leadership capacity will always need to be filled, and that's recognized even from the outset. And everyone knows there's such a thing called the Kohen Gadol, and everyone wants to be the Kohen Gadol, and so there is such an institution. But the Kli Yakar says it could be that what Korach was suggesting was something else. Namely, he's not saying that there shouldn't be a Kohen Gadol. He's not saying that there shouldn't be a leader. What he is saying is that each and every one of either Am Yisrael or at least those who are qualified are capable of being the leader. In which case, why not have a rotation? As if to say, there's hundreds of people here, they're all capable of functioning in that role. You started, and that's completely fine. But why not step down and let someone else take over? Because anyone can do it. And that is the meaning of the words Rav Lachem. Rav Lachem means it's enough. You've done enough. I mean, you've done a great job, but it's enough now. And finish your term, someone else can take over. That's what they're saying. And it's interesting in this light to see the words in Pasuk Gimel, where they say, Ki kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim. Now, if we watch those words carefully, we'll note that there's been a bit of a grammatical shift. Eda is a singular feminine. In which case, the Pasuk should have said, Ki kol ha'eda kula kedosha. That's when we talk about Eda Kadosha, Kahala Kihila Kadosha, Kahala Kadosh. If Eda is a singular, so any adjective should be singular. So it should have said, Kikola Eda Kula Kadosha. But rather, says Kli Yakar, what Korach is saying is, not that the Eda is Kadosh and doesn't need a leader. The Eda is made up of individuals, all of whom are Kadoshim. Each individual that makes up the Eda is a Kadosh, and therefore they're all equally capable and qualified of being the leader for a while, and that's what he's claiming, which then is of appeal to everyone, because everyone will get their turn. Moshe has to break the news to Korach that that doesn't work that way, and the appointments are not made by him, they're made by Kadosh Baruch Hu, and if you don't believe, says Korach, so we'll have to find out the hard way, which is Lamaisa, is what happened. And in this vein, let's take a look at the final approach for this evening. And we're already getting a sense, so it's difficult to pin down what Korach is saying. He's so many promises to so many different people and so many different platforms. But as Moshe says to Korach, Vayidaber al Korach v'chol adosu lemor, Boker, he says, in the morning, you'll see. And what does that mean? Rashi explains the first pirush is that it's in the afternoon and people had eaten and drunk, and that's not really not as compos mentis as they should be and clear-headed as they should be. Wait till the morning. Everything looks different in the morning, and we'll talk about it again. But then Rashi quotes a medrash with regards to Moshe's statement of Boker. Umidrasho. Boker, what does Moshe mean by with the word Boker? Amar lo Moshe, Gevulos Cholak HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo. He's using the concept of morning, of the morning, as an analogy for the choosing of Aaron. The way is a certain way. The world is a certain way. There are certain times. Yicholim atem lafoch Boker la'erev. Take the morning. Can you turn it into the evening? You can't. The morning's the morning. It is what it is. That's how it is. Kach tuchlu levatel ezo. Shinema vayer vayevoke vayavdel And the Vayavdel between the different times is the same term used with regards to Aaron. Vayavdel, Aaron, Lakadisho, Kodesh Kadosh. So this is Moshe's analogy, as we said. He doesn't content himself by saying Hashem chose Aaron and that's the way it is, but rather he tries to explain it by use of an image. Can you change the morning to evening? No. So you understand there's certain things that can't be changed. So you can't change the appointment of Aaron either. It's one of those things. But still, we ask, what's behind this analogy? The Korah can't get the point without it. Korah clearly claims that it's not like the morning. So if you say, just as the morning, he'll say, well, the morning is one way, and this is another way, and the never the twain shall meet. Interestingly, there's an earlier comment of Rashi in Pasuk Beis with regards to some of these men in Korah's team. Again, Pasuk Beis reads, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, Vanashim ibn Yisrael, Chamishim u'masayim. So you have these 250 men. Nesiye Eda, Kiriye Moed. Now, the Gemara, pardon me, not Rashi, but the Gemara says, again in Sanhedrin, the words Kiriye Moed. Kiriye Moed, call to the assembly. The Gemara has a certain thing to say on those words, Kiriye Moed. Some of these men were very highly proficient. So much so, says the Gemara, that they were capable of calculating the Moedim. Kiriye Moed. Just like it says, Eile Moedei Hashem, Asher Tikru'u Osam B'Moedam, to determine the Moedim, these people were capable of determining the Moedim as well. And the question, of course, is, that's very impressive. It also seems to be very irrelevant to what's happening. In other words, it's good if you know how to say what day is Yom Tov, but lots of things are good, and what's that got to do with this machlokas? I mean, they seem to have been laying out all their credentials, all their qualifications, kriye moed extraordinaire, proficient in the Kiddush HaChodesh arts. But to the matter at hand, one thing's got nothing to do with the other. So how does the fact that they're kriye moed find its way? How does it become an important point in this discussion? And a very interesting insight here from the Sefer Be'er Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant. Once again, Korach is claiming, why is Aaron the Kohen? He feels it shouldn't be that way. And Moshe says, well, Hashem says Aaron's the Kohen, and that's that. So does Korach have a response? Does he dispute that fact? On what grounds? He can't know. And therefore, says Ber Yosef, it could be that Korach accepts the fact that Hashem said that Aaron should be the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. That may be. But still he feels it's not right. What's not right if Hashem said it? Because Korach says, could it be that Hashem said it in acquiescence to an initiative on the part of Moshe? Perhaps Hashem allowed or ratified Moshe's move that Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol, as if to say, even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately was the one who said that Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol, that doesn't necessarily mean that he initially said that he should be the Kohen Gadol. Perhaps the initiative was with Moshe, which was then endorsed by Hashem. That's Korach's claim. And should you say, well where do we find such a concept? Is there a precedent for that idea that presumably whatever Hashem says, it begins and ends with Hashem? It's not that some people say, suggest something and Hashem endorses it. Says Korach, there is an area of Torah like that. It's called Kiddush HaChodesh. Because as we know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows the Beis Din to decide which day will be Rosh Chodesh. Am Asher Tikru'u Osam, Al Tikru'u Osam, Ela Atem. Whatever day you say is Rosh Chodesh, is Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, says Korach, we find a precedent for the type of thing that I am claiming happened here. In the same way that if the Beis Din says it's Rosh Chodesh, it might not be the day, so to speak, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself would have said is Rosh Chodesh, but he ratifies it. So too, could it be that Aaron was like a Rosh Chodesh appointment? And that's why his men amongst those assembled, it is of the essence, it is most relevant to point out that they were kriyei moed, as if to say, we know how this works. We can do that. What we can do with Rosh Chodesh, you did with Aaron. That's the claim. But that, of course, is an abuse of the concept of Rosh Chodesh. But that's really the emek of what Moshe means when he says, boker, as if to times, and there are times. The Beis Din can say what day is Rosh Chodesh. They can't say the morning is evening. I mean, there are certain divisions that no one, that human beings do not have a say in. And therefore, when he says that it's like, that Aaron's appointment is like the morning that can't be turned into the evening, what he's saying is he's responding to their claim. You say it's like Rosh Chodesh, it's not like Rosh Chodesh, it's like the morning. That's the give and take here. And what's very interesting is, as we segue into the famous episode which is mentioned in the fifth parak of Bava Basra, Rabbi Bar Chana, who was once told by this Arab guy, he said, come, I'll show you where Koros men are buried. And he followed him, which of course can't do anymore, but back in the day, it was safe. He followed him into the middle of nowhere, and he saw this, the way the Gemara describes it, this crevice in the ground, and there was smoke coming up. And the guide says to him, put your ear to the ground, which he did. And he heard them saying, Moshe emes v'terosa emes. And the guide says to him, who's from those parts, apparently he says, this is something that they say every 30 days. And Rashbam, in his papers to the Gemara Bava Basra, says every 30 days, when? On Rosh Chodesh. So Mefarshim are very interested to know what is the connection between Korach's men and Rosh Chodesh, that part of their punishment / rectification is that they need to announce Moshe Emes v'Terasa Emes every Rosh Chodesh. But it says the Be'er Yosef, according to our explanation, they do need to say this on Rosh Chodesh because they actually sinned against Rosh Chodesh. They abused the concept of Rosh Chodesh by claiming that Moshe's appointment of Aaron was like a Rosh Chodesh appointment. That's not true. They should have known to keep that within its proper parameters. It's true for Rosh Chodesh. It's not true for Aaron being the Kohen Gadol. And therefore, on every Rosh Chodesh, it's a day that they need to make it right in terms of what they said. Moshe emes v'terasa. It's not like today. It's like the morning and the evening. So, we've concluded the opening two or three psukim, and we haven't said everything, and all we've discussed so far is what Korach is claiming. We haven't even touched on the question of what he actually wanted, because what he claims or what he wants are not necessarily the same thing at all, as is often the way with these things. But one thing is for sure, by the time Korach is finished, he's got everyone in such a state that Moshe concludes that decisive action is needed. And Korach and his men need really to be punished in a way where it's very clear that everything they're saying is wrong from the outset. And if we take a look at Pasuk Kavches to Lamed, so we'll see where that happens. Of course, the events are well known, but let's see the Psukim. Vayomer Moshe, Bezos Teidun, Pasuk Kavches, Perek Tetzayin. Bezos Teidun Kashem Shlachani. With the following you shall know that Hashem sent me, La'asos Kol HaMasa Me'ela, to do everything, all of these things, every appointment, etc. It's all from Hashem. Kilom Libi. It wasn't from my heart. And again, apropos of the Be'er Yosef, it wasn't even originally from my heart, to which Hashem agreed. I'm only the Shaliach. In Kamos Kol Adam Yimusun Eile, with Gudas Kol Adam Pakeid Alehem, Lo Hashem Shlachani. So here's Moshe. He's putting everything on the line because everything is on the line already. And says, if these people die a natural death, then that means that Hashem didn't send me. You can take that as that. But in Bria Yivra Hashem, but if Hashem creates a new creation, Ufatzas Adam Espia Uvalo Samas Kol Shelahem, the hand will open up and swallow them all up. And Hashem Eile is Hashem. These people have angered Hashem. So, to summarize, Moshe is saying, in order to verify that what they're saying is wrong, and what I've been doing is correct, in order for that to be known to be true, Hashem should create a new creation. And the Sefer Maasei Hashem, Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, asks a simple question, and that is, in order to demonstrate the veracity of Moshe's words, why is it necessary for Hashem to create a new creation? After all, that's quite a big step. Obviously, from Hashem's point of view, it's not a big step. But from our point of view, everything that's been created in the world, that the world needs, has been created. Why call for a new creation? Is it not enough to call for some other type of drastic punishment? Consider, there have been difficult situations in the past, and the Jewish people have been punished. They weren't punished by something new being created. It's enough that they're punished, and that's that. No one doubted what was happening. So why is a new creation called for here? That's a good shaila. It's a simple question. There is a most enigmatic statement in the Gemara, in Maseches Nedarim, in Daf Lamed Tes, which comments on the pasuk in the Navi Habakkuk, one of the Trei Asar. And the pasuk says, Shemesh Yareach Amad Zevula. The sun and the moon, they stood in Zevul. Where's Zevul? Up there, in the heaven. Now the Gemara raises a question, I don't think we would ever really have this question, but the Gemara actually has a seder of the different domains of heaven and what is where. And the Gemara says there's something seriously out of order here, because the sun and the moon, the domain of heaven where they reside is not Zevul. Zevul is higher than them. It's above their pay grade. They are in the Rakia. Vayitena Shemesam Birkia Shemayim. So if they're in the Rakia, what are they doing in Zevul? They seem to be off location. That's an interesting shaila. As I said, it wouldn't have bothered me had the Gemara not raised the question. But now it has. So therefore, says the Gemara, what happened was, and if you think the question was difficult, here comes the answer. The sun and the moon, they rose up to Zevul. And they said to Hashem, Imata osa din leben Amram, onami irim. If you're going to take up the cause of Moshe, of Ben Amram, then we'll shine. Vimlav, ain onami irim. Otherwise, we're not shining. So this is all rather irregular. The march on Zvul, where the sun and the moon go up to issue an ultimatum. What are we to make of all of this? Even if somehow this is a depiction of something, but what is it a depiction of? Says the Maasei Hashem. We need to appreciate something deeply about Torah that perhaps we would take for granted. Torah, of course, is based on emunah. Its point of departure is faith. We may be inclined to think that on an ongoing basis, faith and Torah are two separate things, as if to say a person gets his faith from wherever he gets it from, and then there's Torah, which tells you what the laws are once you have that. That's not accurate. It sounds much easier than it is. Because the truth is that at the end of the day, very difficult to see the Jewish people at arriving at the correct faith conclusions without the Torah. The Torah doesn't just is not just a result of Emunah. It doesn't just take off from when Emunah stops. But rather, it also feeds back, because when you have the Torah and everything the Torah talks about and the Masorah, etc., those things, they promote Emunah. And moreover, says the Maasei Hashem, we can test the theory. Because the classic, every other way is very fragile at arriving at Emunah. It's right, it's hit and miss. It is what you make of it. The classic pondering nature, which is much vaunted, and if you look at the world, you'll come to the conclusion that there's a creator. Most people look at the world, they don't come to that conclusion. In fact, Avraham Avinu, the most outstanding person of that millennia, and the founding father of the Jewish people, is famous for being an exception. And what did he do? He looked at the world the way it seemingly everyone should be looking at the world, but no one else did, which means no one else does. Not only in Avram's time, but also after his time. That's a reality. Because your conclusions from pondering nature, They are what you'd like them to be, and the bottom line is whatever you'd like. And therefore, this is what the Gemara is depicting or expressing in a very kind of esoteric way, because we say the sun and the moon, Hashemai Mesapim Kavod Kel, they tell of Hashem's glory. They do if you're listening, they do if you have a notion, but if you start from scratch, you're hardly likely to get it from there, which is, in a sense, a waste of what the sun and the moon are meant to do. They're telling a story, no one's listening. They're beaming out a message, no one's receiving. And that's what's expressed by the Gemara, which says, they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ima ta'osa din leben amra, because what's at stake here is not just the veracity of the Torah, it's the entire question of emuna, who basically will disappear if the Torah disappears. And if so, ein onu mi'irim, we won't shine. Meaning our illumination will be lost on everyone. We won't shine in the way that you want us to and that we're meant to. And again, all these truths are known, but they're expressed as the words of the sun and the moon. And what that means is important to appreciate this aspect of Torah, whereby so many things of how to look at the world are true, but we only see them as true once we have the Torah, which gives you that orientation, it gives you its own basis, otherwise you wouldn't see it. And therefore, says Masi Hashem, what Moshe is doing when calling upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create a new creation in order to demonstrate the veracity of Moshe's position and the terrible mistake of that to Korach, intentional or unintentional, is what he's saying is, I'm calling for a new creation because ultimately what's at stake if the Torah is not recognized, Hashem as creator is not recognized. The two are indelibly bound up, and therefore the verification and the authentication of the Torah will come through Hashem once again in this one place in history, acting as creator, because that goes together, and it's bound up together with an acceptance and appreciation of Torah itself. Just a final few moments to take a look at the episode of the staffs, because the machlokas had a few iterations, and just when you think it's finished, something else happens, and we're complaining about something else. But the final episode takes place in Perek Yud Zayin, in Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber O Bnei Yisrael, Dekach Meitam, Mate Mate Leveis Ad, Meis Konosiem Leveis Avosam. Each tribe, still somehow there was murmuring and dissatisfaction, discontent with regards to which tribe is the chosen tribe. And therefore, we have another hakafa here, where they take the staffs. And what do? Everyone writes their name on the staff. Pasuk Yotes Bihinach Tam Ba'ol Moed Lefnei Ha'edus Asher Va'ed Lachem Shama. Put in the Mishkan. V'haya Ha'ish Asher Evchabo Matei Refrach. The one that I chose, his staff will blossom, and then it will be known. And that's what happened. And sure enough, they come in Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Vayimi Macharas, Vayavo Moshe El Ola Eidus, Vinei Parach Matei Aaron Leveis Levi. It was Aaron's that had blossomed. They knew that it was Aaron's. Obviously, they must have known, otherwise, who knows whose it is. They knew it was Aaron's, its name, etc. Vayotzi Perach, Vayotzi Tzitz, Vayigmol Shekedi. It had the blossoms and the buds and the almonds. So Mefarshim raises the Shaila, how is Shkedim, of all things, the sign here? What does almonds have to do with anything? I mean, if it was something else, then what's the yichus of the Shkedim? So again, the Masi Hashem says that a Shaked is a fruit. It's an almond. It's a type of nut. But the word shaked always has an association. It's an association of definacy and of decisiveness. You find, for example, another interesting staff with almonds on it was seen by the Navi Yirmiyahu in the beginning, in Perek Beis, where it's his first Nebuah, and Hashem shows him, this almond, he says, Makal shaked ani ra'eh. And he sees again these almonds. That's part of his nevuah. And we have the interpretation in the Navi. Hashem says, "Hey, tavta le'os." Yes, you've seen correctly. What's the message? Kishakedani, because whatever I'm about to do will happen decisively. We use the term shakdan, or have a shakud l'matora. It's something which is very, very firmly attached. And therefore, says the Ma'aseh Hashem, the message of the Shkedim, because Shkedim means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's Aaron, and it's very decidedly Aaron. It wasn't in response to anything, or it wasn't, it's not that it could be anyone that happens to be Aaron, it is absolutely Aaron. That's Shaked, that's almond validated. Just a final comment from the Sefer Or Gedaliahu, of Gedaliah Shor. The Gemara tells us that the staff of Aaron was one of those things that was put together in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, together with the Aron. There was the flask of Man, and then one or two other things, and one of those was Mate Aaron. And the Gemara says that when the staff of Aaron was put there, it was put together with its flowers and its fruit. And what that means is that when the Pasuk describes these three stages, Vayotze Pharaoh, Vayotze Tzitz, it had these flowers and buds and almonds. The flowers didn't fall off, because when you took the staff, the flowers were still on it, which is interesting, because that's not normally how it works. Normally it's a progression, as if to say, first you have the flowers, and then they fall off, and then other things happen, and that falls off, and then you have the fruit itself. What is the significance of the flowers staying on the staff even when it has borne fruit? And the Or Gedaliah says something really fascinating, and it wraps up the whole parsha as we saw it from the beginning. Leadership is a very delicate thing, because it gives a person the opportunity to do great things, but it has its own appeal. And things change. Sometimes the person's vision changes when they're on the way to leadership or when they attain leadership, as we know. Perach, lifroach, pricha. It's about developing. It's about changing. It's about doing things. When it comes to leadership, the question is, why does the person want the leadership? If they want it for the wrong reasons, if they want it for its own reason, then all the flowers fall off when the fruit comes out. In other words, that's when the pricha stops, because mission is accomplished. The mission is to attain leadership. So all of the investment is in the campaign. It's not in office. Or if it's in office, it's in the office, but not what the office can do. And that's the difference, says Rav Gedaliah Shor, between a Korach person, lahavdil, and an Aaron person. Korach wanted the office. And he was prepared to do many things, and he made great promises, and he had a great talent. He brought people together. But he would have jettisoned them as soon as he becomes the Kohen Gadol, because their interests are not aligned anymore. And he only really came together to propel him to become the Kohen Gadol, if he can do it. So he's full of flowers, which all fall off when the fruit comes out. And therefore, that's the message of what it means to be a leader, which comes from Aaron's staff. Namely, that the prachim that are there in the beginning, they shouldn't fall off when the fruit comes out. All of the energy and all of the ambition, all of the idealism and all of the drive which gets a person there should stay with him, because once he's there, that's when he really needs them, not when he can finish with them. So these are certainly a great fascinating things to talk about. We'll leave it over there for this evening, and the Mitzvah Shem, meet again in 2 weeks' time. Until then, all the